Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joe Buck Emmy Award-winning Fox Sports play-by-play man.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all! 8-7-10!
Not even his own bladder will stop him from making the call.
I'm turning to people in the booth, taking my headset off, going, I've got to pee. I'm wearing this parka because it's cold. They put a trash can in front of me. I end up with stage fright. They're counting me back from commercial. 5, 4, 3, and then boom. Floodgates open, and I start peeing. The problem was play resumed, and I actually called a touchdown live on national TV while peeing in a trash can. Thank you. Very proud of that.
It's Joe Buck with Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run.
Oh, my God. How did I miss that story? Great job, Zach Withers, finding that and putting it into the open. I'm sure that is exactly how Joe Buck likes to be brought in to do radio interviews in a market like Chicago. As Joe Buck joins us right here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score, that is a remarkable moment, doing play-by-play while eliminating, if you will, while removing toxins. I think it's just being efficient, frankly.
It's just passing water. That's all it was. And by the way, it is the best way to be introduced in a radio interview in a market like Chicago. That basically sums up my career. I called the Cubs winning the World Series.
Yeah.
And by the way, you can hear the excitement in my voice, Chicago. I'm not fighting that fight anymore. And I peed while calling a touchdown. It was actually a Green Bay Packers touchdown when they were playing in Milwaukee against Atlanta in the last game that the Packers played at Milwaukee County Stadium as a home venue.
Those are good bathrooms. Those are good bathrooms there in Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, you had to. It was basically the press box in our booth was at least a 38-minute walk to the bathroom and a 37-minute run. And I figured I was going to miss plays, and I just had to, the half wouldn't end. And sometimes, you know, nature calls and you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just another skill set. You know, it's like we've seen Al Michaels do a lot of different sports through the years, you do a lot of different sports. But I don't know. Have you discussed this with Michaels or anybody else? Are you the only guy you know who has passed water and called a touchdown at the same time?
I think I'm the only idiot who would admit it. But I mean, and it was not an age thing. I was literally in my mid-20s. I was 25, I think, when that occurred. So
that's prime prostate health right there.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't handle it at 25, think how I'm doing now at 50. Not good.
I've always wanted to acquire the Stadium Pal, which was a product where you had the urinal leg bag that you would tape to your leg, and it was attached to a tube that led to a receptacle tip. And it was marketed as something to allow football fans to never leave their seat during the course of the
game.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've used it for years passing drug tests at Fox.
You and I think it was Ontario Smith, I believe it was.
They had a thing, a contraption called the Wizinator.
Yes, sir.
And it was really expertly named, and you can pretty much guess what was going on there. So I don't believe that we can pull this interview out of this nosedive, but I'll lean on your expertise.
That's really the only reason I called, is to discuss that stuff. Joe Buck is with us here on 670 The Score. I absolutely loved the mic'd up segments of the All-Star Game this week, Joe, and I've really enjoyed them for several years now, right? I feel like George Springer was first when he was in the outfield a few years back. And I was like, man, this is cool. And then this year, you guys really went next level. Freddie Freeman at the plate. Francisco Lindor, which felt like 10 minutes out there. He's like the mayor of Cleveland recommending restaurants and stuff. And I think we have this moment. Dewey, Zach Withers, we have the moment from the outfield when Bellinger and Yelich were on mic and you were in their ears. He's going to play it in a second here. But, like, how difficult was it to convince some of those players to allow you to be in their head as much as you were?
Well, it is. It has been like a three-year process. I think we started it 3 years ago, and you're right. It was George Springer, who I have the utmost respect for a lot of different reasons. First of all, he's a great player. Secondly, he agreed to do that while he's doing his real job, letting me talk to him while he's in the outfield. And third, he grew up with a stuttering problem. And for somebody, you know, who was trying to multitask, do his job, you know, and present himself to a national audience, I think the world of that guy. And any team would be better with George Springer, obviously, but he's just a good person. Then we did Bryce Harper, and I was talking to him about the NFL. He's a big Cowboy fan. And so you figure that these guys, these younger guys, kind of get it, and they grew up in the multitask TV era, almost all access era, if you will. And so they don't fight it. We went into that game on Tuesday in Cleveland, and John and I, Smoltz and I, were trying to beg Justin Verlander to wear a microphone that would have been sewn into his undershirt on the mound. And we said, you know, just think out loud. Like if let's say Freddie Freeman steps in, think out loud, like, hey, I want to get this guy out with a fastball up and away. And he was like, are you kidding me? No, no, no. And then Smoltz said, well, I would have done it when I was playing. And that started to get him to bend a little bit. And then by the end of our little visit with him, he said, I'm going to go home and I'm going to tell my wife about our conversation. If she says that I should wear it, I will. And I said, well, if Kate rolls over tonight and says, honey, wear the microphone, you'll know that I got to her, because I think it would be groundbreaking. And then as we got to the game, I didn't think we were going to be able to talk to anybody. It's a lot harder, I would think, to hit with somebody talking to you than it would be to pitch. And Freddie Freeman just wore it up there. He was mic'd up so we could listen to him and talk to him when he was in the field. And he told our guy down there, I'll go up and hit with it, and they can talk to me. And he was great. So it really hasn't been that big of a fight. And I think once these guys see that the earth continues to spin and the flow of the Nile is going the same way after they talk to national TV, I think it's an opportunity for them, and it's an opportunity for fans to get to know who they are better.
Yeah, I completely agree. We learned stuff about all those guys and about the game. I love that Verlander considered it, and then apparently Kate said no. Kate rolling over is a terrific image, and we all appreciate that. But so she apparently said no. He looked a little annoyed when Freddie was up there talking. And maybe that's the context. Did he know that Freddie was mic'd up at that point, or was he just?
I don't think so. Okay. You know, first of all, that stadium, that field was so loud. I don't know that anybody could understand what anybody was saying down there. And so I think he was yelling out to Verlander, saying, "Hey, I'm Mike. They're going to tell me what's coming," which we never had that center field shot of the signs, or I might have whispered it to him and probably would have gotten fired in the process, but meaning, hey, there he's going to throw a fastball here or whatever. But I think he was yelling that out to Verlander. I don't think he was annoyed. I don't think he could hear what the heck he was saying. Yeah. So I think that was more the reason why he kind of looked like, well, what? What are you talking about?
It's an interesting game to do these days because, you know, you're watching and the guys don't necessarily care who wins as much. And you can kind of feel that when you're used to watching a game with intensity. But the way to make it interesting, I think, is that stuff. I mean, I thought it was fascinating and really let us in. Some games present stuff in a different light. Man, I looked askance at the idea of London baseball. Joe, I was like, oh, this is silly. Why are we doing this? You're trying to grow the game. And then it happened, and that looked like, and as a viewer, it seemed like an absolute delight.
It was great.
How was it for you?
Yeah. It was great. I took advantage of Fox's dime and went over there a few days early and enjoyed it. And I can honestly tell you, I talked to the managers. I'm pretty good friends with Aaron Boone and Alex Cora, the two managers. And I said, I know all these guys are saying all the right things publicly about having to come over here to London, but what are they really saying, like behind closed doors? And somebody had asked me going into that game, who do you think will win? It was a British reporter, and it was, who do you think is going to win? I have no idea, and it really depends on the pitching, as we ended up seeing, obviously. And I said, it'll be the team that complains the least about having to go over there. And these guys they're young guys. They wanted to go to Europe, and they had 2 days off. The travel these days is not that much different. You probably saw the pictures of the way the Red Sox went over there. It's not that much different going Boston to Seattle or whatever it might be. And they did it with a smile on their faces, enjoyed it. It looked and felt like Major League Baseball. I know the scores were ridiculous. I think the only thing that happened, and this is one theory why the ball was just getting pulverized, is it's an Olympic stadium, and they built it with wind currents in mind and sprinting in mind. And so they really limited airflow in that stadium. First of all, it was hot the day we did it. And so I think the ball was really jumping. But secondly, the pitcher said the ball, the pitches just kind of sat there because there was no airflow in there because they didn't want airflow to help a Usain Bolt or somebody sprinting that could bother records or, eventually get an asterisk because there was some huge wind current behind the sprinters. So that's how they built it. And that's the only explanation because there were no cheapies there. Yes, center field is short, but they put a 16-foot wall on it. And the best thing I can say is what I said on the broadcast. It looked and felt and smelled like Major League Baseball, and it didn't feel tricked up. And that's the best thing. That's the best compliment I can give it. And with my small brain,
it's Cubs Cardinals there next year. All right, you mentioned the ball jumping. It sure is juicy. We're all physicists now. Did you know that?
Right.
You've been confirmed as a physicist. You referenced something during the All-Star game, Joe Buck, that I've been saying that just because they think it's definitively juicy, the ball, doesn't mean baseball wanted it this way. What I can't imagine is nefarious owners and executives and Rob Manfred sitting around with physicists and saying, how can we get more homers? How can we get even more? Because they've been rising at a somewhat problematic level, frankly, for like a decade. There's a lot of execs who don't like the direction of the game. A lot of owners who I think don't like the direction of the game.
There's no doubt about that. I just think in this day and age, whether it's the Kennedy assassination or anything, it's virtually impossible with as many avenues as there are to disseminate and distribute information, be it on social media, be it, Drudge Report, whatever, Deadspin, whatever it might be, to have some sort of a collusion by the commissioner and the owners and have a conspiracy to get home runs up. I just think it's gone this way. And whatever the manufacturer is doing with a baseball, it's a little tighter and it's a little harder. And it doesn't take much for the ball to jump these days with as hard as these guys are throwing and as talented as these guys are, and the change with regard to launch angle and how that's become such a big part of hitting these days. So I think a lot of things are combining to make the home run numbers go through the roof. But you can admit or you can acknowledge that the ball has less drag on it. I would think that's, a Bryson DeChambeau Pythagorean theorem away of figuring out if the ball has less drag on it than it did, let's say, 5 years ago. But that doesn't – then you can have a separate conversation and say, well, it doesn't mean there's a conspiracy. And that was just my point during the game. I just don't think anybody's capable of having a conspiracy and it not getting out. It just is what it is, and they'll have to go back and investigate and figure out how to, if they want to, put more drag on the ball or not have these home runs fly out of the park the way they are.
Here's a moment from the All-Star game that I was referencing with you and Bellinger and Yelich, and you're talking about the juiced ball.
Do you guys think the baseball is tighter, has less drag, is jumping more in 2019?
I think they're perfectly fine the way they are. Yeah, me too. I'm not a scientist, so I'm just trying to hit the thing, and whatever it does, it does. I'm with Cody on that one. I think all of us hitters are
stronger.
Right, you guys where are at, right where they're at.
You're stronger. Just say it. You're stronger.
No, we know what we're doing with our swings more now.
See, there you go. They know what they're doing with their swings, but they're also, they're not going to object to this. It's the pitcher's fight, and somebody's going to have to advocate for the pitchers if this is going to go anywhere.
You're correct. And when we talked to Verlander the night before the game, he said he's getting a blister on the inside of his right thumb, and the only other time he's had that blister, and the guy's pitched forever, was 2017, when everybody was talking about the same thing. Hmm. He said it has to do with the stitching on the ball and the density, I guess, of the baseball. But wow. Yeah, I he's mad about it. You know, he made a big stink about it the day before the game, and so then you have to talk about it. But I just refuse to believe it's a conspiracy. I just think it's pretty much fact at this point. And what they do with it, we'll just have to wait and see.
Looking back through your book a little bit this morning, Lucky Bastard is a terrific read from 2016. Came out in that year that the Cubs won the World Series and you made the call, Joe Buck. And reading some stories about you hanging around your dad as he worked, it feels different now that my seven-year-old has been hanging around the radio station every once in a while or a remote broadcast or two. And I wonder what that feels like for him to see dad with his weird job. Do you remember when you thought to yourself, I want to do it? Or a moment that was reinforced for you as you were hanging around your pop, Jack?
I don't think there was a singular moment. I also don't think that there was ever a time that I didn't want to do it. I just think it was kind of assumed by me, at least. I don't think by him. I'm the seventh of eight kids, and two of the other kids are in the media business, and that's it. So there, he had plenty that didn't go in that direction. But I think he and I were so close. The title of my book is Lucky Bastard, and it's both literal and figurative. And when I came into the world, I think he wanted to be really hands-on and close with me. And so he took me on road trips when I was a kid. I saw how much my dad loved the business. I saw how excited he was to go to work. I saw even at the end of his life, and this is, you know, not necessarily at the very end, but when he was in his mid-60s and I was getting into the business and I was starting to work at Fox and he was dealing with Parkinson's and everything else that he had physically going on, nothing dimmed his excitement for going down to the stadium and talking to players and being around the ballpark and doing his job. And I think when you see that enough as a kid and you're close with your parent, no matter what your parent does, your dad or mom, and you see how much joy they get out of it, I think it's natural to want to go into that business. And so I was just fortunate that he wanted me with him. And I knew even when I was 3-4 years old, if I wanted to be in his office when he was doing the very kind of interview you and I are doing, and he was on his telephone and he had kind of a deeper, more serious voice, and he'd say, well, the Cardinals tonight or blah, 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 I knew that he was on the radio, and if I wanted to be in there, I had to be quiet. And so I was quiet as a kid, and I just took it all in, and I eventually moved over one seat from the extra seat in the broadcast booth of the Cardinals to on the air as at one point 16-year-old, and then at 18, and then I was full time when I was 21 after doing 2 years in the minor league. So I was fortunate, and I owe it all to both he and my mom, who really kind of guided me to where I am today.
Yeah, lucky. Lucky is the understandable adjective that yep. begins the book. I'll leave the noun alone for this conversation. But I got to tell you, on Father's Day, I had my dad on. He's 86, and he's the reason I'm a baseball fan. And we had a conversation that I enjoyed and a lot of listeners enjoyed. And as I was thinking about that and thinking about you and your pop, I want to play this just in case people don't know, Joe. This is your dad calling the 1991 World Series Game 6 and you calling the 2011 World Series Game 6 as they both end. This is both calls back-to-back.
Choke the ball. The hitter swings at the arm motion. Into deep left center for Mitchell.
and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Freeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
That, I got chills, man. That was a remarkable moment. And I don't know how many viewers knew it, but I remembered it there because that call of the Kirby Puckett home run, it's Puckett, right, in 91?
Yeah, Puckett.
It is so memorable. And just like, that's beautiful. Was that in the holster to pay homage to your dad? Were you thinking maybe this situation would arise? Or?
Yeah, I think anytime there's been a Game 6, I kind of did a twist on it way earlier in the early 2000s. That was along those lines. And then I retired from doing the Jack Buck cover band, Greatest Hits, after that one. But I think there were a lot of things going on there. First of all, that was the back end of the year, which was really the reason why I wrote the book, of my paralyzed vocal cord and why that all happened. And my voice had just started to come back about 9 months after the fact, in October there, and I can still hear it in my voice. It's not all there, but it was an easy call to make because it wasn't a long call. So I was still choking out play by play calls that were short, sweet, to the point. And it fit. It was a St. Louis kid, David Freeze, who hit the home run. It was in St. Louis, and I could picture my dad saying that one booth over to my left when that came out of my mouth.
Wow.
And my mom got a kick out of it. Some people ripped me for it, which is the world we live in these days. But it just fit, and that was it. And it was almost 20 years to the day that he had made that call. And the cool part about it all, at least to me, is not only was it my dad in 1991, but Tim McCarver was sitting with him in 1991, and Tim McCarver was sitting with me in 2011, which is kind of the crazy twist to all of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thanks for retelling that. It's appreciated. It's just like, it's rare you get that moment to truly connect with Pops in such a direct way. You got to stay in touch with the fan side. I stay in touch with my pure baseball fandom through my complete meatball Cub fan wife. I mean, she is ridiculous, and her passion is thankfully contagious, and I feed off of it. You are a sports fan when it comes to hockey, like a clean, healthy sports fan who doesn't have to worry about anything and can just watch the damn game. How was the St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup run? Joe.
Well, I mean, back to my dad yet again. He was there, the first voice of the Blues when they were an expansion team in 67. And so he didn't know anything about hockey, and he was admittedly not great at it. And he used to say it was radio, so he would just pick one guy out a night, and that guy was going to have the greatest night of his life on the ice, whether he was on the ice or on the bench at that moment, or maybe even scratched back then. Nobody really was holding you to the perfect standard. So it was something that was in his blood from the late 60s. I was born in 69, and as I was growing up, you know, he and I spent a lot of time on our couch watching the Blues, and then I became a season ticket holder, and then I started taking my daughters down, and we had seats right behind the net that they defended twice, and it was just kind of our thing. And so for me to get to cheer openly, I'm always accused of rooting against every team, as we've talked about 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And really it's more a function of not rooting for any team that's going on. This is the one team I can root for. It's a sport I don't do. And it's a team that I love and send my money to. So when they won it all, which was an out of nowhere story and kind of a out-of-body experience for a lot of us in St. Louis, it was emotional, and I got it. You know, it's just another example of how when Cub fans or Yankee fans or Red Sox fans or even Cardinal fans who think I root against the Cardinals in the postseason, when emotions are that high, it becomes kind of crazy, and I felt that way. You know, you start listening to the announcers, and I'm listening to Doc Emrick and those guys, and I'm going, I feel like they want the Bruins to win. I'm like, wait, I'm guilty of doing the exact thing that I complain about during October in baseball.
Oh,
and it just isn't that way.
That's so beautiful. You thought Doc Emrick was rooting against
what? And not just Doc, I mean Kenny Albert. And the point is this. Here's the big point.
Yeah.
They're not. They don't care. It doesn't affect them whatsoever. but you want your hometown guys to do it. That's the bigger point, is when, especially in baseball, when you listen to your guys, and you guys have great broadcasters there, and Len is not, as you know, I mean, he's not just a great broadcaster, he's a great guy and yep. a good friend. And so he's living and dying with the Cubs, and Jim too, and certainly Pat Hughes and Ron, and those guys are phenomenal, not just at what they do, but they're also proponents and people who live, breathe, eat, sleep, and walk Cubs baseball. And fans that watch those guys or listen to those guys know who they're rooting for, and that's how it should be. And so now the games mean the most. You got 108 years of not winning it, and now the national guys show up, and it's like, wait, I want my guys calling the game, not somebody who's screaming and yelling when the Indians guy hits a home run. So I get it, and it's every year I feel that way in hockey. And Kenny Albert's one of my best friends in the business, and I joke about it with him. Like, I get it. You're not there. You don't care. But mm-hmm. I want to hear the hometown guys, and that's really the bigger point.
I'd love to hang around and just listen to you and Kenny tell Marv and Jack stories. I bet there's some good stuff there.
There's plenty of good stuff there.
All right, last thing for you. I keep badgering you to come out and hang out at the Rock Show, the Hot Stove Cool Music, Theo Epstein's event every year. That green room is the best. I've dreamt of adding Joe Buck to that green room and just watch the conversations ensue. Eddie Vedder played. Nah, Buck is busy. He's too busy. Buddy Guy last month. No, I have a life. I believe kids or family or young twins, something like that, got in the way. I don't know.
Yeah, like 0-year-old twin boys.
Yeah, 0-year-old twin boys. The Sox, by the way, looked good at the U.S. Open.
Yes, thank you very much.
But what living music artist would make you say, okay, Spiegel, fine, put me on the guest list. I'll be there.
If you get either one of the Thompson twins there, and the one guy had that great solo album, I'm just kidding.
There's three Thompson twins as well, as we know. Which is
oh,
great.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know more than I. I mean, if Vedder doesn't get me there, nobody will, and it just has to match up at the right time. But I think as these boys get a little bit older, uh-huh. and, you know, they're almost a year and a half now, you know, by three they'll be out of the house and working, and we'll be good. I'll show up, and we'll have a good time.
All right. A Thompson twin, maybe Boy George solo I could come up with, you know?
Yes, or backup. The Culture Club, any of that stuff. I know that's right in your wheelhouse.
It is. That's exactly my milieu. All right, Joe, thank you for the time. Appreciate the
all right, Matt.
The time. Nice to talk to you.
Anytime, you know that.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Have a great day. Joe Buck, he's a good dude, people. 670 The Score is where you are. It's Hit and Run. I'm Matt Spiegel.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.